Your host, have a great evening.
The time is 5:59. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is Right to Survive Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of KBOO at the Clinton, Thursday, September 21st at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. This month, KBOO at the Clinton will be featuring the documentary, I Am the Blues. I Am the Blues highlights the last original Blues Devils, many in their 80s, still living in the Deep South. Featured musicians include Barbara Lynn, Henry Gray, and Jimmy Duck Holmes. Again, that's KBOO at the Clinton featuring I Am the Blues, Thursday, September 21st at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. Yeah, I'm so glad.
Have you received your KBOO Silent Drive letter in the mail? Here's your chance to support your favorite community radio station and enter a chance to win some fabulous prizes. No letter? No worries. Go to kboo.fm to find out more about what you could win when you donate to KBOO between now and September 14th. Here's a teaser. The grand prize is a 3-day, 2-night stay at El Dorado Resort and Casino with airfare in the biggest little city in the world. Yes, that's Reno, Nevada. The first prize is a night out on Burnside with a night at the Jupiter Hotel with dinner at Le Pigeon, drinks at Cider Riot, and breakfast at Grendel so you can dive deep into the Burnside nightlife. And our second prize will allow you to stock up on medicinal and recreational treats at Jane PDX. Go to kboo.fm to donate. When we come together, we build our community's resilience, and there's no better time to invest in KBOO than now.
You're listening to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 in Portland. I'm Ibrahim Mubarak of Right to Survive. On this show, we go to Ground Zero, Portland, Oregon, and report news and stories that corporate media don't cover. We'll bring the uncut reality from the perspective of the unhoused community.
This is Lisa Fay with Right to Survive Radio. R2S Radio goes into the houseless community, making their voices heard, speaking to individuals on subjects that directly relate to their daily struggles.
Somebody help me.
That's work.
This is not healthy.
Oh, man.
Hey, another Right to Survive radio show on KBOO 90.7 FM. On your radio dial, and those you out there listening who not able to see us or be here, you can reach out and call us at 503-231-8187. And our guest today is Don Mazziotti from Haven of Hope, and a special guest today, Larry
Kugosik
from Bend, Oregon. So, and I'm here with our other host, Lisa Fay, who's been with us for about 6 years now, right?
Seven years.
Seven. Oh, forgive
good evening.
Me. Good evening, everyone. Okay. As you know, that we have a houseless crisis, and it's growing more and more and more. And with the flooding and the tornadoes in Houston and Florida, more people are experiencing houselessness and being put in the shelters. And you watch the news, they devastated. And so they say it's a natural disaster of nature. And I say houselessness itself is a natural disaster. And what do people do? Do people come together and figure out how to come up with solutions to help people that's experienced disaster, like life experience? And so I know back last year, Homer Williams and Don Mazziotti of Haven of Hope want to come up with a houseless compound. And and help people to like a one-stop shop where people can sleep and go meet social service people to have their needs met and get productive and get housing. Am I right, Don?
That's exactly right. Modeled after the Haven for Hope in San Antonio, Texas, mm-hmm. where I think if people visit San Antonio, they won't see people living in tents under bridges or in camps because they have a system to address the issue, and they're doing so very effectively, and we wanted to transplant that to Oregon.
Can you let us know what are some of the projects that you are working on?
Well, the Oregon Harbor of Hope, which is the corporation that we created, nonprofit, 501c3, has a whole variety of projects that we've got underway. The immediate ones are we are putting together two mobile facilities, one a laundry truck and the other a shower truck. And those trucks would circulate not only among the 45 homeless camps that we have in Portland, but also go to schools because many of the kids, we have 4,000 in Portland that have no address, would have the opportunity to have a shower and to get clean clothes. So that's, you know, a really important initiative. We are in the process of negotiating for a shelter for families and kids, working closely with the Salvation Army to manage that facility. I'm not going to tell you exactly where it's at, but it would accommodate about 100 families. We're working on that. We've got a medical protocol that's sponsored actually by the Northwest Acute Care Specialists, about 800 physicians who have volunteered their time to provide acute care at no cost to the community. And they are going to be meeting with Whitebird out of Eugene, who's mm-hmm. thinking of expanding into Portland, and a number of other things that, sure. you know, I can certainly go into, but those are where it's at today.
So having a house, this is a full-time job.
Absolutely.
I think we have a caller on the line. Caller?
Hello?
Yes. Who are we speaking to tonight?
Hello?
Yes, hello? We can hear you.
Hello, how are you doing?
Doing okay.
Good.
My name is J.J. Bailey. How are you doing tonight?
Doing okay.
Good, J.J. How are you?
Awesome. It's really neat to hear Homer's voice.
That's really not Homer. That's Don.
Who is this?
Don.
Is Mr. Williams in there tonight?
No, he isn't.
Oh, interesting. I thought that's who I was hearing. Don, who's the caller tonight? Who's the person you're interviewing tonight?
Don Mazziotti. Homer and I work closely together. He's chairman of the Oregon Harbor of Hope. Okay. Yeah.
Yes. I've heard of Harbor of Hope. It's very nice to talk to you, sir. You're being closely related with him and all that.
Yep.
Maybe you might be able to help out as well.
Yep.
I've been tracking a lot of your ventures with some of the things that you're getting involved in and the trips that you took. I think the trip, where was it, to Texas or was it?
Yeah, we've been to Texas about 4 times to study exactly what they're doing, how they're doing it.
God, I wish I could have gone. I've heard so much about that place. It sounds really neat.
Yeah, it is.
I've been involved in a few different shelter programs and housing programs, and in Portland, in Reno. I've toured some other cities too, Eugene, Seattle. And plus I've tracked a lot of things that are going on in other places as well. I was curious, as an investor or a developer, what would entice a person such as that to maybe be into, what would be a selling point on trying to get an investor or a developer to invest in purchasing land to build what you call micro villages or tiny house villages and such like that for the homeless? Mm-hmm. I mean, we seem to have tested these theories out, and they seem to be working, and it's a matter of, you know, getting land and getting people to invest in purchasing
land. So what is the question that you have to ask them?
Well, what would as an investor, what would entice you to participate in investing in purchasing land to develop for mini villages for the homeless?
Well, I think frankly, there is very low return on any kind of investment in monetary terms, but what you have to look at are what are the social returns that someone could gain. And we believe, and we're focused entirely on the private sector, trying to get the private sector to get involved, just as you're suggesting. And we've had no problem in that regard with regard to equipment, trucks, volunteer time, medical care, all of that kind of stuff. Land is a much different issue because land carries a cost that's got to be retired, whether it's taxes or some other foregone income. And, you know, it's tough to find that kind of situation. But I can tell you that there are people out there that we're talking with to try to attract them, but not based on a return on their dollar, but a return on their social investment in the community. That's what we emphasize.
Basically, it costs money to deal with the homeless situation throughout the city, whether it's cleaning up the garbage or dealing with the constant having to sweep people, businesses possibly losing money because homeless be camping out around their neighborhood on the streets and this and that. And plus did you get my drift?
No, I understand completely. Believe me, I understand.
So wouldn't that be, to create places like that, wouldn't that be an investment for such business community?
Well, bringing them together to make that kind of investment is really the issue. And to get it done, you've got to have a location that will work. And we've been searching for locations, but we lost the Terminal 1 location because the council was not persuaded that on that 12 acres of ground, which would have been perfect to develop, but the council did not agree with that. And so we continue to look, but we've now refocused on smaller shelters, which we're calling safe harbor shelters, that would not be as large, would not accommodate as many people, and may make it more feasible. And that search has been underway for a while, and we have a shelter in our mind right now.
Okay, we're going to be back with Don and Larry after this small break, and this is some music.
Sorry, you would have kept going.
Sorry, yeah.
So, Don, what is the mission of Harbor of Hope?
Well, our mission is pretty broad, which is to provide a full range of services that will help the houseless in Portland, but to do so primarily through private initiatives, private sector activity. So we're trying to stimulate the private sector to participate and really to work on the solutions, of which there are many alternatives to address the houseless problem. To date, it's primarily been the work of nonprofits and the government, and that's great. Mm-hmm. The more they can do, the better. But the private sector has been not entirely on the sidelines because they certainly support a lot of great initiatives, but there are opportunities for them to be involved further, and that's what we're trying to encourage, and we're having success in doing it.
Are you having any assistance from the city or the county to spark more interest with the private sector?
We coordinate with or try to keep informed both the public sector as well as the nonprofits, but we are not at all leaning on those sectors for contributions to what we're doing. We want large companies and small companies alike to be involved in our activity. And so it's really a private sector initiative. We're not looking for tax incentives or tax credits or anything like that. We want the community to invest, and we think they are.
So are you saying that the private sector are the ones that funding OHOH?
Yeah, entirely. We do not have any, nor do we solicit any public money or grants from nonprofits or anything like that. We're interested, obviously, in foundations and their participation. Your Oregon Community Foundation sits on our vision committee, as you do, Ibrahim.
And that's out the bank.
Yeah, and the CEO of Umpqua Bank. I mean, we have a fairly diverse group of people on our board, and they're all contributing in the way that they can. But it's a private sector initiative.
Has it been tough getting the private sector to climb on board?
Well, we had them strongly on board with the notion of a, you know, a restoration center, I'll call it, at Terminal One. But there wasn't sufficient private sector political initiative to do that. And one of the problems was it's industrial property currently. There's a great deal of concern about the loss of industrial property, and frankly, I share that concern. At the same time, we're now working on ways to find industrial property that can be exchanged for that which could be developed for restoration services. And you probably know that Homer Williams, for whom I do not speak, but Homer Williams has floated an idea about getting the owner of the Broadmoor Golf Course to donate that to Oregon Harbor of Hope. And the equity that would result from all of that could be used to buy property and trade out industrial properties around the city. And if we can accomplish that, it'd be fantastic. Oregon Harbor of Hope cannot and is not directly involved in it, but Homer's out there panhandling for this idea, and hopefully he's successful.
I know this came about because Homer had a spiritual awakening or a dream or a great compassion that he wanted to do something for the houseless community. Yep. Can you tell us how he shared that with you to get you to be more involved in this project? What's that right?
Well, I've known Homer Williams for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And so I know what his business practices are and what he's done in the past. And he called me a couple years ago and said, I'd like you to be the project manager for a project we're working for in Lentz, which was a big apartment complex. And he said, why don't you come in on Monday and talk to me about it? And I did. And I got there on Monday, and he said, I've decided not to do that project. And I said, oh, okay. Well, you know, at least take me to lunch. And he said, instead, I want you to work for the homeless here in Portland.
Okay.
And you know, here's my idea. This is what I like to do. Are you willing to do it? And frankly, I said, yeah, I'm willing to help. You know, so that's really how it started. Homer's background, and I'm not going to speak for him, like I said, but Homer doesn't come from a great deal of wealth. Neither do I. My dad was a butcher. He's from Walla Walla. You know, he's a GED. That's about it. But a fantastic individual. And you know, when he went to see the Haven for Hope in San Antonio, I think that's when he, like, we could do this. We need to do this. The people who are houseless in Portland are from our community by and large. They're our people, and we need to help them, period.
Okay, we'll be right back with more of what Don is letting you all know after this music.
When your strange faces come out of the rain, when you're strange, no one remembers your name. When you're strange, when you're strange, when you're strange. All right, yeah.
Welcome back to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And I know all of you out there have questions, so you're welcome to call us. I'm inviting you to call us at 503-231-8187.
And while we're waiting on callers, I would like to ask, is Harbor of Hope planned to happen all at once, or will there be phases?
Well, we want to take it step at a time, as we have been. Our first step was to develop a plan and to assess the situation. Our second was to do a survey of what is the, you know, what do the homeless people, the houseless people here want and need in the way of shelters and other facilities. So we've completed that work. And then we developed a vision and shared that with the mayor and others, as well as the business community, saying this is what we think is the right way to go. And so every project is a step in that process. Ultimately, we want a restoration center.
All right. And as we're thinking about a restoration center and we have to face it in over a period of time, mm-hmm. how will the showers and the mobile laundry be an asset to the houseless?
Well, we know that it's a public health issue. David Bangsberg, who's the new dean of the OHSU and PSU School of Public Health, is on our board, or shortly will be elected to our board. And David has shared with us the nature of the public health issue presented by people who are unable to have their own shower or laundry service. It is a major issue, and it's one that these mobile facilities won't solve entirely, but eventually we'd like to have a fleet of such facilities, so long as they don't forestall having homes, permanent housing, transitional housing, supportive housing, SROs, everything that, and shelters, everything that we need to accommodate what probably is about 16,000 people.
Why can't the schools open up the showers to their students are houseless?
I think the schools, and we've certainly talked to Portland Public School, they have limitations on what they can do due to both state educational policies as well as liability issues which concern them. And they're faced with a huge issue now in trying to upgrade from the lead issues in their water. So, you know, kids basically can't have water in the public school system. One of my girls goes to Lincoln, and, you know, everything's shut down.
Okay, we have a call on the line. Caller, can you introduce yourself?
Yeah, hi, I'm Katie. I'm a neighbor in Portland, and I have a follow-up question about education. I think I missed your segment there as I was calling in, but I was going to ask if you could talk to us a bit more about how your model integrates with the educational system here in Portland. You mentioned mobile schools and serving families, and I know that one of the big barriers for families and children is having a consistent educational environment. So have you thought about transportation or how, you know, you can ensure that kids have a consistent educational opportunity as part of the services that Harbor of Hope is offering?
Yeah, that's a great question. The reality is what we're doing is working with the families and a family shelter in Goose Hollow that is sort of providing those linkages to both the educational community because they're accommodating kids, families with children. They have that expertise. We're not going to try to duplicate what they're doing, but instead we're working closely with them. They badly need to expand. There are somewhere around 700 people, families with kids, every night who are on the streets in Portland. There are 1,400 people who are on their waiting list. And, you know, those kids, and we have 4,000 children in Portland without addresses, all go to school somewhere, or hopefully they all go to school somewhere. We want our mobile shower system and laundry system to serve those kids, and we think that we can make those linkages. We've talked with Portland Public Schools. They're very open to the discussion, but they, as I mentioned, have their hands full now dealing with a lot of issues within the school itself. But yeah, we're working closely with them and hopefully providing some support.
Did that answer your question, Katie?
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I mean, I know the transportation, I just to throw that out there, I know the transportation is also a huge issue. I've heard stories of students taking 2 or 3 Max Line tickets to their school while they're moving around. So I think, you know, if there's a way to consider that as you are developing your model, that would be something.
Well, Katie, one of the great things is that TriMet is offering free student passes on the Max system now. We hope that they expand that, frankly, so that people that find themselves in a difficult situation who are houseless or otherwise don't have to absorb those costs, because transportation costs are, you know, a huge component of living. And you got to get to your job. And frankly, about 60% of the homeless people we've met do have jobs, but unfortunately, they're $11.25 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
or $11.25 an hour short. Of
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, thanks so much.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Katie.
Thanks.
Who is it?
Hello there. I'm your new neighbor.
We are neighbors. Yeah. We are neighbors. Well, we want to be.
Welcome back, everybody. This is your co-host, Lisa Fay, and I'm here with Don Maziotti, and we are talking about Harbor of Hope and some of the advantages and some of the challenges that they are facing as they are moving forward. My next question for you is, what type of opposition or barriers from the communities have you seen? Are the neighborhood associations willing to have a facility in their neighborhood, or are the neighbors all leaning toward not in my backyard?
Can I tell a story?
Sure.
So maybe a year or so ago, I think you probably know this, when we were proposing the restoration center at the T1, mm-hmm. which is in Northwest, part of Portland, and close to the so-called Alphabet District, which is a relatively higher-end residential area on the west side, right? So we knew that we had to talk to the public, and we held two public forums. About 125 people showed up at each one for us to explain the restoration center idea. This is what we'd like to establish close to your neighborhood. This is what we want to do. And we wore body armor. I mean, you know, we thought that, you know, tomatoes, cantaloupe, everything was going to be in fashion that night. But at the end of the day, 250 people, largely from the Alphabet District of West Portland, three people objected, three of 250. 40 people signed up as volunteers to work at the facility. I think there's a huge amount of compassion, a huge amount of willingness to help. It's a matter of trying to help them determine, here's what you can do. I mean, we got probably 10,000 pair of socks last winter with a simple solicitation to the community. We got them. We went through Union Gospel Mission, and they distributed those to the houseless. We're going
to
do it again this week.
Bill Russell.
Yeah, exactly. Bill Russell, a great guy. Absolutely.
So I think we have another caller on the line. Can we introduce yourself and ask your question?
Yeah, this is Curtis from Springfield, Oregon. I was wondering, the bank foreclosed houses that are owned by the bank and are just sitting there creating a blight on the neighborhood, can we restore those and use those? And because it amounts to really a subsidy to the bank. The city of Portland and Eugene and Springfield, we're not in the business of subsidizing the bank by just letting them, and the private sector might be into it because they're just bringing people's property values down anyway.
No, that's a great point, Curtis. Here's the deal that I know. They call them zombie homes, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And Portland has, you know, maybe 1,300 zombie homes. These are slum landlords or absentee landlords who's given up on the property, haven't paid their taxes, and so the public sector is responsible for them as they go to court or through the tax assessor. What we would like to see, and what we have proposed to the city and the county, is that these zombie homes be turned over to land trusts like Proud Ground here in Portland. Turn these over to a land trust and have the land give the land trust the ability to rehabilitate those facilities. Almost all communities, including Springfield and Eugene, as well as Portland, have rehabilitation grants available to fix these places up and bring them back online, and then allow the land to be held by the land trust and the house to be rehabilitated so it can house people that are otherwise houseless. And, you know, we haven't heard back on our proposal, but that's what we'd like to see done.
Well, one more thing is that I just thought of is when I was researching it, they can be put into a receivership where a judge can force the bank to create a receiver with a lawyer would dictate what is to be done with that house instead of just letting it sit there.
You're correct, and many of them are in receivership, but because they go into receivership, it's a long process. And one which can, you know, last for years. It isn't nearly as quick as if the city simply moves on it, transfers the deed, or moves the transfer of the deed, and then directs that they be cleaned up, which is what we'd like to see.
So one thing I was wondering if the neighborhood association can purchase houses, and they can be the landlord and turn them into share housing, where, as Don spoke earlier, 60% of the houseless people that live on the street do work, but they can't afford the high cost of rental. So maybe they can rent out rooms and that money go back into the neighborhood association and they become the landlord.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd like to see that accomplished if the zoning permits that multiple use, okay, multiple residential use. And if they do it through an existing, rather than trying to create a new organization, a new entity, mm-hmm. do it through an existing land trust. Because creating a land trust is a major complication. And like I mentioned, Proud Ground is a good example of something that would be workable for that purpose.
Yeah, and then, but using as a, like you're saying, as a multiple use thing, though, for showers and a job, a place where they can have an answering machine or whatever, get big messages.
Yeah, absolutely. Like it's not multiple easy.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Curtis.
And Don, I want to ask the question where all inquiry minds want to know. And I know it's been thrown that out there. People ask me questions, and they want to know, are you in it or Williams, Dyke and Dane? I mean, Homer Williams and Dane.
Whatever they are.
Whatever they are. Dyke going to get me. Yeah. For the money.
No, as a matter of fact, the Harbor of Hope organization has within the bylaws and articles of incorporation that no one on the board, including Homer Williams or Dyke Dame or Williams and Dame or anybody, nobody can gain any profit from this. It's prohibited, period. I can't. I'm a developer historically. I cannot do that. I wrote that article to make sure that there was no question about it. We're not making any money. We don't want to make any money. In fact, we're giving money as much as we can and hopefully setting an example for others in the private sector to do the same.
Have other developers, I know I read something in the paper earlier this month that other developers are following you off lead.
Some are really doing great stuff. Mm-hmm. The Menashe family mm-hmm. is a perfect example. Schleifer Furniture, the former Schleicher Furniture with Beam Development, they're contributing by opening up space that is available currently. Ultimately, that's not going to be a long-term solution, but short-term is fantastic. And, you know, they are be complimented for the work they're doing. I'd like to see a lot more, and we're certainly encouraging that to happen.
One last thing before we go to a music break. Will it be job opportunities for the houseless community?
Well, obviously we'd like to see that, and we'd like to see training. We've talked to the Work Systems Incorporated, which mm-hmm. is the local, you know, training entity that is funded by the federal government, although those funds are probably being diminished. But yes, we've talked with them. They're fully willing to work with us, and we'd like to frankly identify a group of people who could be trained. I mean, we've got a labor shortage here, and we don't, but we don't have a shortage of people who need jobs, right? And decent jobs. And so if we could match those two things together, and work system, that's what work exactly. system is supposed to do. And that's what we're working with them to accomplish.
All right.
So one more question. How long or short do you anticipate people stay from houselessness to exiting Harbor of Hope?
Well, if we use Haven for Hope in San Antonio as a model, the average stay is 9 months. Average stay in their program, not necessarily average stay on a campus or average stay in Haven, but average period of time as they go through that system is 9 months. If you're in there for 2 years, they take you somewhere else because they just, you know, you need different treatment, different alternatives. But, you know, as we've watched it, and we've watched it pretty closely, and there are friends, as they are come into a single point of contact, no multiple applications, none of that kind of stuff, they come into the Haven for Hope in San Antonio, they are houseless people. They've been on the streets, many of them, for a long period of time. They're not in great condition, physically, mentally, you know, or otherwise, and they receive the treatment necessary, whether it's dental, medical, psychological, right there, okay, on site. All of the nonprofits that are there that are, you know, ministering to the houseless community have representatives there so that you have wraparound services provided. They have a supportive and permanent transitional and temporary housing available that they have built on the campus. That's, you know, what it's for. And at the end of that process, they have a job waiting for the individual. And they have a call center that AT&T has set up with 300 jobs available, and they rotate out of those jobs into higher paid positions. We'd love to do that here.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, well, that's the model we're training for.
All right, thank you. And we'll be back with more, Don, after these good music that was selected for y'all to listen to. Thank you, everyone. Thank you for listening. And to this point, we're going to talk with a guest from Bend, Oregon, Larry Krasnacek. And Larry, you'd like to introduce yourself and tell the listening audience what you do.
Yeah, hi. My name's Larry. I'm from Bend, as Ibrahim said. And to give you a little bit of background of how this all came about, I kind of went through a career change in the last few years and took the addictions counseling training at the community college in Bend. And when I completed it, I had worked with the homeless previously, the houseless, in a program called Family Kitchen, which is the meal that's provided 6 days a week to the houseless in Bend. And with the this training, this addiction counseling training, I got together with my professor. Her name is Monica Vines, and she came up with the concept because a lot of the efforts that we've made previously in trying to deal with addiction among the houseless have not worked, clearly. And so we were trying to come up with a new concept. And there is a new concept. It's becoming more and more popular across the country, and it's called harm reduction. And that is that you try to put people in a position, in a place where they can deal with their addiction. If you're constantly putting stress on them and your drug testing and so forth, and violating people whenever they might relapse, and kicking them out of a program, that has not been working in terms of trying to get people to give up their addiction. So we came up with harm reduction, and started working with some of the other programs in Bend in applying that to the houseless. And one of the first things that we discovered is that one of the most stressful aspects of being houseless is that you're houseless, is that you don't have a place to stay. And that constant stress contributes to people, depending on their addiction, for relief. Bend, as it happens, is a very generous community too, as is Portland. And the fact is that you can get just about any kind of service in Bend in terms of food, clothing, all kinds of other services. But the one thing that you don't have in Bend is a permanent place to stay. And so we have been working with Sally Pfeiffer. She owns Pfeiffer Associates, an addiction counseling company out of the private sector in Bend. And she has agreed to be the overarching agency to help us start a homeless camp in Bend. We think that that's probably the most expedient way to go about it right now. We don't certainly don't have the money for any kind of a big structure or anything. And in my experience with a lot of the houseless and the relationships that I've developed with people, there. A lot of folks very often prefer being in a camp than they would being inside. I was just talking to a gentleman this morning who actually has a place to be inside, and he says that he can only last that way for 3 or 4 months, and then he has to be outside again. And he would be more comfortable in a camp. And the camp would give us the opportunity to give us a number of opportunities. First of all, relieving the stress of people being houseless would help with the addiction. And then it would be a place where agencies can come in and provide the services that would be necessary. And so we've already lined up the agencies ready to step in and to work with the people once we identify the property and establish where they're going to be able to stay. And I started visiting Portland and talking with Ibrahim it's been maybe a year or two now.
Yes, it has.
And learned about the model of the Right to Dream 2 camp that existed downtown. And it was very good, very effective model. And that's the model that we'll take back to Bend. It'll be a self-governance camp for the homeless, along with community support and community involvement. So we'll have a place to provide a lot of services to people. And that is, the same situation exists in Bend, is that a lot of the homeless are working, do have jobs, and there are a lot of jobs available right now in Bend. They are the low paying jobs, but there are jobs. And the problem is holding the job, making sure that you have a shower when you go to work, make sure that you wake up on time, make sure that you can get there, make sure that you can communicate with your boss if you have any difficulties. So having an organized camp would provide the support necessary for people to be able to hold on to their jobs too. So it's a pretty exciting concept. The police chief is in favor of it in Bend. Because right now a lot of the man hours of the police, or the working hours of the police department, are spent in just really literally moving people from one place to another.
Okay, Larry, we have a call on the line. They anxious to talk to you and ask you a question. Caller, what's your name and ask your question.
Caller, are you still there?
Caller.
I am, yes. Okay. Hi, this is Michael Anderson, and thank you for taking my question. It was related to the prior caller. I really appreciate what this guest is sharing, so I'll be very brief with my statement so you can get back to this important conversation. But in terms of Mr. Mazziotti and the Harbor of Hope, I think we need to take an important look back in history, because part of that presentation was not... I think acknowledging his role when he was in charge of the Portland Development Commission of developing large parts of this city without any affordable housing in it. And as your guest said, one of the biggest challenges, your current guest, one of the biggest challenges for people without housing is not having a house. And the failure of him and his role, and then Homer Williams and others, to meet the obligations that they promised to over a decade ago on affordable housing, we're still paying for that today. So when I hear them talking about wanting to make a big warehouse shelter to get people off the street, I say, keep your money and invest it in affordable homes. Let's make a difference in people's lives. Let's not put a big Band-Aid over something. Let's talk about real solutions. So that's my comment, and continue on with the interview. Thank you for the show.
All right.
Thank you for your call, Michael.
Larry, as I listen to Don and I'm listening to you, both of you all want the agencies, the social workers, to come to the site where the houseless people are at, instead of the houseless people going to where the social workers work in their perimeter. Do you find this to be helpful, and why are you having it that way?
Yeah, it's extremely helpful. A lot of times... the folks are intimidated by trying to navigate the system, and it can even be intimidating in going into one of the big buildings necessary to, and then figuring out where to the proper desk and so forth. So we actually have some of that going on right now. I've established a lot of relationships with a lot of the houseless in Bend, and I did that in it's a collaborative effort in Bend. It's done at the Methodist Church in downtown, and a number of agencies come in. We have a clinic, a Mosaic. It's called Mosaic Clinic. It's a medical clinic that has a van that comes there, and we have and also a program called Thrive, and it was started by a social worker named Sarah Kelly, who she's started a nonprofit of her own and gotten various grants and so forth, and she has social workers that come to the homeless now in order to process whatever needs they had, try to find out the kind of programs that they're eligible for. And so that's already happening, and as I say, the agencies are ready to do more of that once we get a
organized place. That is awesome. It's good to hear that so many good people are coming together in Bend. We're going to take a quick music break, and then we will return to our show.
See the lonely man there on the corner. What is waiting for? I don't know. But he waits every day now. He's just waiting for something to show.
Welcome back. We're on Right to Survive Radio, and we have two wonderful guests here, both doing amazing work here in Portland and down in the Bend area. And they're both trying to get something going on in their cities that would be assets for the houseless community, for the city as a whole, for their counties, and both programs will address many of the issues that are being faced by houseless individuals and families that are living on the street, surviving day to day, living with obstacles. Larry, you touched a little bit on the Houseless Kitchen, the Harm Reduction Program, the Mosaic Medical Van, and the Thrive Program. Are those organizations coming together to help with the camps and that you're trying to create the self-governing camps down in Bend? And do you have support from the mayor and the council?
Yes. I should add that there is already a shelter, an indoor shelter in actually there are a couple of shelters. The Bethlehem Inn, which was started some years ago by the churches and now is an independent nonprofit, and it's a converted motel that provides indoor shelter, but it is consistently full. And then there is the Shepherd's House, which is also a religious effort that provides indoor shelter as well. And it is consistently full as well. And so, yes, all of these agencies are aware that even with those efforts that we're not meeting the needs. And I do believe, I know, speaking informally, there haven't been any formal votes put forward yet, but speaking informally to both city council people and county commissioners, they are for it. And frankly, even people who are not particularly sympathetic to the homeless feel that something needs to be done because it's just sort of a chaotic situation right now. where people are, as we know, staying in people's neighborhoods, staying in camps near other people's, you know, unauthorized camps near other people's neighborhoods. So it's sort of a chaotic situation, and as I said, the police department is for it because of the man hours that are needed for that. And again, as I said, Sally Pfeiffer, this is a opportune week because we just got our papers authorizing us as a 501c3.
Congratulations.
Yeah, yeah.
So we are officially registered now. And that will catalyze a lot of help because people will be able to get tax breaks and they'll feel better about a consistent organization that will provide the organization to accomplish this.
Okay. Are you seeing more and more houseless people become houseless or move to Venn, migrate to Venn?
Most of the houses there are locals that grew up there. A couple of things. In a way, I think Bend is sort of the canary in the mine, if you want to say. Mm-hmm. Or it's like the community of the future, in the sense that it's a very wealthy community, actually. There's a tremendous lot of wealth in Bend, a lot of retirement wealth, and there is some high tech that's moved in there, too. And what happened was that the logging and the wood processing mills went down a few years ago. And when the mills went down, it's the kind of the typical thing that's happening around the country with other kinds of mills. When the mills went down, the good paying jobs were gone. And at the same time, a lot of investment money, because it's a very beautiful place to live, it's a very attractive place to live. And so a lot of retirement money came in, and so the price of the real estate just went through the roof. A lot of people from California, frankly, came up where they could buy the same kind of house for a lot less than they could in California.
You think?
And it just drove the real estate values sky high. Mm-hmm. So the folks that were left there, first of all, lost their jobs from the mills, and then weren't able to afford the cost of housing anymore. And what has happened too is that with the high tech that's come in, I think that we're going to have more and more houseless because the economy has changed, and you have to be pretty highly skilled to be employed anymore. You can't just get kind of a laborer's job anymore and get by. And that's exactly what has happened in Bend. Most of the jobs are skilled, the good-paying jobs are skilled jobs in the medical industry and so forth.
And your organization or you just joined Oregon's Homeless Bill of Rights to promote or get the Right to Rest Act bill.
Yes, yeah, yes. And working with RAP under cooperation with Ibrahim. Yeah. Okay. Ibrahim's kind of my mentor here.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to go for a station break. We'll listen to more music and more questions to Don.
Against the wind, little something against the wind. I found myself seeking shelter against the wind.
Whatever you want.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm your host, Lisa Fay, with my co-host, Ibrahim Mubarak. And I have another question for Don. And my question is Mayor Wheeler supportive of Harbor of Hope? And if he is, in what ways? What is he doing to support you and to help you get this project going, because this is a large project and we don't have time to wait. Winter's coming, more families are out on the street, just like Larry said. People are in an economic crisis here.
Well, first of all, I think this is Mayor Wheeler's number one issue because it's the number one thing he hears about. And as the winter approaches, he'll hear more about it. And so it's a constant. I like the fact that he's reached out not only to us, but to other organizations to ask for some guidance and ask for some input. And we provided that. It's one thing for us to articulate what we want. It's another thing for him to be able to deliver it. I mean, obviously, he's not the king. He's only one among many. And I think that at this point...
King Wheeler, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. He's doing a lot that people don't see. He's being criticized, I know, for not promoting sufficient affordable housing. But I believe that in reality, he's asking the right questions of the right people. He asked us, for example, to provide him with a paper on what could we do to promote affordable housing way back in February. We gave him some of those ideas. He needs to take them through the process. But I can tell you this. Williams and Dame, Rob Justice and his organization, Ed McNamara, Turtle Island Development, they are developing affordable housing, but unfortunately not in the city because the land is so expensive and the regulatory burden is so great. So what needs to happen is we need to have land available on which affordable housing can be built, because people think that homelessness is just about the need for camps and food and laundry and the like. Well, those are all needs.
Exactly.
But one of the drivers of homelessness is the absence of affordable housing, mm-hmm. as people are driven out of their homes, driven out of the city, and having to locate elsewhere in the bushes and the islands, mm-hmm. in small cities, and who don't have the support services necessary. So yeah, I think Mayor Wheeler's on the right track. I think he supports the kinds of initiatives that people are mentioning. And I also think, importantly, he's asking the question, is the public money that's allocated being spent wisely? That's a dangerous territory for an elected official, but he's asking those questions. I think it's great, and I compliment him.
So I have one more question. With two council seats up for vote, and we just heard that Dan and Nick are not going to be running again.
Yeah,
Nick's not going to be running.
I thought I heard he wasn't running either. He was going to take care of some personal matters. Okay. Do you think that you'll be starting from ground zero again with getting the council to see things the way that the mayor's seeing things? Or do you see that we have enough strong support with Chloe that whoever comes in and fills those two empty seats will be on board in more supportive programs such as Harbor of Hope?
Well, as you know, as a nonprofit organization, we don't engage in politics at all. I think Commissioner Udaly is doing good things. There's going to be an interesting run for those seats, no question about it.
I'm going to get some popcorn and Coca-Cola.
Yeah, and we'll try to provide whatever educational and other opportunities those candidates need, but we won't be endorsing anyone.
Right.
It's going to be an interesting time. Dan has done a good job over a long period of time. He was an intern on my staff when I was director of planning many, many years ago. I can't believe he's retiring before me. But, you know, I think he's done a good job. I hope that Nick Fish is able to confront the issues that he has personally and medical problems. But it'll be an interesting time, and certainly going to be a contentious time. And I just hope that every single candidate that runs understands that they need to tackle this issue head on.
And that's the houseless issue.
That's right.
Right. Okay, we're about out of time, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for listening to our show. We have a Right to Survive meeting tomorrow from 5 to 7 at Sisters of the Rose Cafe on 6th and Northwest Davis. And if you want to know what to do in your communities and your neighborhoods about the houseless situation, contact us and join our Right to Survive Ambassador Program as we try to stitch the communities together and come up with active solutions in the meantime.
And if you'd like to do something on a statewide level, join the Houseless Bill of Rights campaign and endorse our campaign for the Right to Rest Bill. We'll be going back into legislation in the next long-term session, and the more endorsements and the more support we can get for the bill can start simply by emailing your local House of Representatives and your local senators and saying, look, we need a protection bill for the houseless community so they have a place to sleep, they have a place to eat, they have a place to pray, where they're not being criminalized. So they can have the basic building blocks given to us by our Constitution to be able to become productive and not be hindered by sweeps and jail time for exercising human rights. Please go to our website, righttosurvive.org, and check us out. Or if you'd like, there's ways to support us on there. And we're going to close out tonight with one more little music clip, and we hope that you had a good informative show. Thank you for joining us, and thank you to our guests Larry and Don for gracing us with your presence.
Yes, thank you.
And knowledge.
I love you so much, you see. You're even in my dreams. I can hear.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 7 o'clock. Combined Culture Radio is coming up next.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Division Midway Alliance Festival of Nations on Sunday, September 17th, at the parking lot of Duke's Country Bar and Grill here in Portland. The Division Midway Alliance Festival of Nations is an exciting